you have a studio in your house then, or a personal space?
Yeah, I kind of turned my room into this like mostly studio, and the school that I teach part time at has a lot of instruments that I can use, but a lot of I've been working on a lot of like drum set in here, and you know, kind of getting my recording chops up. You know, recording some stuff with friends that I've had here, or I have a musical family, you could say. So they, you know, everybody likes to kind of mess around, write songs and stuff like that. So, this is kind of like my space, you know?
Yeah. I feel that's definitely the future though. I mean, I feel like the whole crisis exposed that. It's like the people who have the ability to record themselves know how to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's a huge, huge benefit right now.
A lot of YouTube. And,
yeah, it's true. Well, yeah, I feel like it's, since you went to school, I mean, when I went to school, that was never covered actually.
Right.
You know, so, but yeah, that's definitely a real world application.
Yeah, and something that I have an interest in too. I mean, like I've always had an interest in. You could actually say this is one of those skills that I have been enjoying being able to work on because I never had the opportunity in school, and that's, you know, just based on like so much like just classical training that it was. That's all I was focused on, just getting everything. Up to a versatile level. And then, so when I was able to start working on recording stuff and the podcast I was doing in my undergrad, but I was getting help from a guy who's a producer in Lake Charles. And then I was like, when I decided to do it again, I was like, okay, well, I better figure out how to do all of this and, you know, watch as much information as I can. And cause I use Logic and I use, you know, all these other programs that were pretty foreign to me. So I was actually telling, I forget who I was telling this, but it's just one of those things of like, I finally had the time to explore how to do it. These programs are so, intricate whenever you're not familiar with them. So, and you know, the concept of like, understanding EQ and understanding mic placement, understanding drum mics, understanding everything like that. That is a huge skill that I was lacking in. So I'm glad I've had the time to like, you know, get it going, work on vocal mics and, you know, making a relatively cheaper mic sound good. It's tricky. So.
Yeah, that's great, man. Yeah.
I appreciate it. Yeah. Yeah, it's good to talk to you again. It's been a while.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did that tour in it's been a while actually. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a few years. Yeah, 4 years maybe.
Yeah.
Have you talked to Shane? Y'all still doing?
Yeah, I talked to him. Actually. I will see those guys in a little bit here. We still do like I don't know if you know Glenn Velez.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we do like a little like Zoom hang.
Cool.
Yeah, we play and talk a little bit. We mainly just play actually, but it's Shane. Right now it's Shane, myself, and another hand drummer named Yusef Sharonik.
Okay, yeah. Actually, yeah. I think I've heard of that name too.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. He also has has an online class and a bunch of stuff. To be totally honest, I've been still playing frame drums. And I still play my ocean drum a lot, but I've been playing more like a drum set stuff lately.
Yeah, I've seen the videos.
Yeah, so that's kind of like what I have more stuff, more opportunities here to do that. And so that's, yeah, kind of what I've been doing.
This is something that's I didn't get a chance to ask you, but when you were in Lake Charles, but how did you establish these contacts and this networking overseas in Europe? How did you establish that? That's something that's always.
Oh, well, I mean, just, you know, before we would just tour, mm-hmm. and then you would meet people basically that way, you know.
Who were you touring with?
Who was I touring with? I toured a bunch with many people, but like with this guy named Petros Kompanis. He's a bass player. He's Greek. And we would also play, he had a band for a while, and we would tour with a guitarist named Gilad Hexelman, who was really, really good, mm-hmm. and still is really, really good. And also with a clarinet player named Kenan Osme, who, actually that kind of started, it's funny, I play in a band in Paris now, and it's like the way I kind of met the people that are in that group is I was going to Paris to play a gig. I had my drum, there was a bass player, a great bass player named Chris Jennings, who I just talked to earlier today, who at the time was playing in a band with Mark Juliana.
Wow.
You know, he's a badass, right?
Yeah, of course.
Mark Juliana, Tigran, and the band was led by this guy, Dafer Youssef. So anyways, we were all flying, I don't know, whatever it was, Air France Flight 7 to Paris. And we just started talking. And he said, where are you playing? And I'm playing at a club called New Morning. And I just said, yeah, come down. I'll give you a ticket. And we've been friends ever since, actually. So, wow. Yeah. So I don't know. You know, it's like, I mean, also if you go and, you know, I've played like many times, like Jazz Festival in Berlin. I don't know. You just meet the people playing at the festival and make friends that way and see other friends who are playing, you know, at this sort of the same tour circuit, if you will, or something.
Yeah, you know, that kind of circle of, I guess, high level musicianship finds itself. I think the it seems to find itself, and if you know, you're dropping names that are just like masterful at what they do, and I feel like those people find each other. It's because the complexity of the music that that you play, I find is like just otherworldly. Like, you know,
thank you.
Well, you're welcome, because like your drum set playing is very inspiring to me, because it, for one thing, you're playing like a hybrid, like kind of world mixed with, you know, modern kit mixed, you know, it's a very like hybrid setup that, that fits a sound that's unique to you, but probably also unique to the music that you're playing, which is probably influenced by a lot of different cultures. So, you know, based on that, early on in your playing, I know you have a marching background. So you did drum corps, Cavaliers, I believe, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, it's actually, I did. I did Phantom Regiment Cadets.
Wow.
When I was like, yeah, totally. When I was like, I don't even remember now, 12 or something.
Wow.
I was playing tenors in that. And that was obviously a super huge like growth spurt. I did that, and then I auditioned for Cavaliers the following year. Maybe I was not 12. I don't remember the exact age. I was young though. I think when I was doing Cavaliers, I was like 15, 16. I played cymbals.
Crazy.
Then I did quads. I did the tenor line it's been so long, I can't even remember how many years. A lot.
Yeah.
And then I actually stopped. I kind of like quit, actually. I didn't quit, but I took a year off. Mm-hmm. Because I was feeling a little burnt.
Yeah.
And then I hung out and I played drum set all summer, actually. I just like played music in a different setting. And then I went back. I went back. Then I won INE, actually. I won the solo competition. And then I did one more year. And then I was aged out.
Man, that's a lot of drum corps.
Yeah, it was a lot, actually. You know, my dad's a band director.
Oh, okay. So, I didn't know that.
So we would go to shows since the time I was little, and I was always super drawn to the drum line and the drummers. I have to really thank, that experience and organization. Also, just for like, you know, I grew up in Columbia, Missouri. And it really opened my eyes to like the rest of the world, actually.
Yeah, I mean, definitely
the United States. You know, one of the first tours we did with Cavaliers, we went from like Chicago all the way across to Northern California, down California, all the way across to Florida, all the way up to New York, and then back to Chicago.
Made the whole loop.
Totally. So it's like, I think that was like 1993. That was intense.
Yeah. Well, you're seeing the world.
Yeah, well, then it just kind of opens up your the possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Then, unfortunately, after that, I mean, I was doing that, and then Mason offered me a scholarship to UNLV, and then I went there.
How was that? How was that during that time? How was UNLV during that time? Was it a madhouse like Dean's told me?
I thought it was great. It was pretty inspiring. It's like, you know, they really have a great a great program there. You know, it's like a great program. It's a big program. They had, I feel like lots of times, you know, you go to schools and like the percussion department is like the black sheep. You don't get funding. You know what I mean? It's like you're like the losers or something. It's like at UNLV, I immediately felt that like as soon as I arrived, the school, the music school, the university valued the percussion department. You know, it's like we had funding. We went to like Mexico to Mexico City to play at a festival. You're like hanging with Marimba Nandayapa and like at nighttime. You know, it's like it was a great experience. I also got to say that like it was such a great experience. It was hard for me to leave, but I also felt that like if I didn't go, I wouldn't leave. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I felt like it was a really great experience, but I'm also really thankful. After that, I went to another friend of mine, Joshua Decaney, who's a great percussionist. He was just leaving the graduate position at Kansas City Conservatory. And so I went there after
that. Right down the road from your hometown, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
A little too close for comfort, actually. It was a different world. But but like that was also a really great experience. Larry Kaplan's an excellent percussion professor, and also Bobby Watson. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
I'm not.
Saxophone player who played in Art Blakey's band.
Oh man.
Yeah, I know. So it's like that was a pretty heavy, it was a heavy learning experience. And he got there the first year that I did. He was like an endowed chair. He had just moved from New York, so. He brought in a ton of guests. That was a great experience because I played in big band. I played in combos, but I was also quote unquote a classical percussion major.
Yeah. So you got a little bit of everything.
Yeah, totally. And it's like that was also a really good, it was a positive experience. I could have gone somewhere where, I mean, like, I know I teach at NYU now, and like there, if you wanted to be a classical percussion major and play in the big band, it's like, that's never going to happen.
Never.
It's like, they draw the line and like, that's that. There's no, you know, intermingling.
The two cultures of New York percussion.
It's just that school. It's like super divided. That's that. Which is not, I don't think that's a good thing, but.
No, I mean, I was always taught versatility, and I know you were too. Exactly. So it was, maybe not everything will be the most practical in the professional world, but at least we can do it if we got the call, kind of thing.
Yeah,
and exactly. So, I mean, but New York is such a staple for jazz drumming, and you know, it's for a person to go there and be like, okay, I'm going to go to New York and be a musician. That's like, you know, throwing yourself into the pot, basically. And how was that those first, you know, experiences in New York for you? First of all, I mean, like, did you just decide to go to New York, or were you drawn there from something else?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I was more alerted to what was going on there once I was in Kansas City.
Uh-huh.
Just because there was a lot of the musicians in Kansas City were like going to New York, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there was a really great saxophone player who was in Kansas City when I was there, Logan Richardson, who's now in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, you know, all those guys would hang, and there was just kind of like, you know, you should go. So then when I graduated with my degree, I was either going to go to LA or to New York. And I don't know, I decided to go to New York. Mm. But it's like, that's like a kind of crazy story, because the day I was supposed to leave was September 11th, 2001.
Wow.
And so I woke up and my dad was like, you know, check your phone. And so I was shocked, as everybody was. And I didn't leave in my Ryder, you know, like U-Haul truck.
Yeah.
So I waited a while, actually, but then I did go, I think, like a week later or something.
Man, that just so happens pretty, to be a crazy tragedy the day you're supposed to leave. What a way to tell you, like, hey, do you think you should go or not? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Trust me, my parents, my grandmother especially was like, don't go.
Yeah.
But anyways, I went. I initially stayed. I initially stayed with Dave Phillips, who's that? Do you know Dave Phillips? He's a trombone player.
He's in Vegas now.
He's in Vegas now. He's playing. He just works a bunch. Yeah. Anyways, he was in New York at the time. Him and his boyfriend, they had an apartment. They had a really small, extra. It was like a closet, basically. It was like you walk in. There's like a bunk bed. So I had like a bunk bed, a little desk under the bunk bed, and then like all my drums in a pile.
Sounds like New York.
Yeah, totally. That was it. And then I moved there, and
the rest is history.
Well, yeah, not really. I mean, it was definitely like hard for a while.
I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, that seems like a very tight-knit and hard to get in scene.
I mean, I guess you could say that, but like, I think honestly, you just gotta put yourself out there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I kind of feel the same way now in Paris this year. I'm feeling like I'm having a similar experience that I've had in New York initially. It's like, I was just emailing people today I don't really know. Like, I know a great piano player here, and I'm just like, hey, what's up? Let's play a session. You know what I mean? Like, let's play some music together. You just have to reach out, know which direction you want to go, and contact people. I actually, one of the earlier jobs that I had in New York was moving percussion gear for Ethos Percussion.
Wow.
They're a percussion group. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
I'm not, no.
So it's like, they've disbanded, but... yeah, it's actually true. I did know one person in New York. I knew this guy named Trey Files, who is an excellent drummer, and he was in Ethos. And so I had a job, me and a friend of mine, we would move stuff for their tour. And in exchange, we would get a practice space. We would get paid a little bit of money, and also we would get free lessons with a percussionist.
Wow, that's actually quite a hookup.
Yeah, actually, to be honest, it actually kind of was quite the hookup.
Yeah.
And I luckily fell into that. Yeah. So that's kind of, and then, you know, there's a community, you just kind of get in the community and and see what happens and what gigs you end up doing. And, you know, I think if you're positive and like you're on time and you're not going to, you know what I mean? You're not stoned. You don't show up high at the, you know, it's like, you just like, you learn the music.
Be a professional.
Know. Yeah, totally. It's
the like, definition
then,
of,
then know. Hopefully things will, and you're not an asshole. Hopefully things will happen. But I mean, like, I think that description that we're describing right now, it's like, that's the, I mean, I guess you just have to think about your goals. Are your goals to have your own band and play your own music, or are your goals to be like a, you know, initially my goal was just to work.
Freelance. Basically. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I just wanted gigs, like, you know,
no matter what it was, right? I mean,
exactly.
Whatever the call was.
I've done like the craziest shit. I mean, from a Macy's Day Parade float music to like, I don't know, man.
SNL?
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. I was trying, exactly, SNL.
I was hoping you would say it, but I remember you mentioning it.
Yeah, I've done that. It's clearly never, it's Valerie Naranjo's gig. Mm-hmm. She's been doing it for like, I don't even 20 years or something, maybe more.
Yeah, that's a chair that people do not give up easily.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. There's no reason to. I mean, it's like literally, you know, you show up at 10 a.m. in the morning and you're there all day. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
Yeah, that is... those are the kind of experiences like that I was starting to see in Vegas, like just like the weirdest gigs, man. Like one time I was doing this like for hire, like we're gonna do like some fake drumline hype up, you know, like drum thing. I was like, yeah, sure, why not? It's not exactly what I pictured in my head when it comes to Las Vegas music playing, but okay, we'll do that. And it's for Dana White's 50th birthday party, the UFC president, and like we're the act that's between Don Henley of the Eagles,
oh wow,
and Gwen Stefani.
Is that Howfrau Brian Howerton?
No, this was but he did ask me about another gig involving Taylor Swift, okay. And I couldn't do that one, but. Yeah, this one was so strange. Like, you know, Don Henley's up there playing all his Eagles hits and his single hits. And where it was just strange, man. I'm sitting there with a drum on. I thought my marching days were over. And I'm like, oh, I got a drum on. And I'm like, I'm really about to go play this weird 50th birthday party at the Aria. And then I'm going to go play the first opening phrase of Holla Back Girl and I'm done, and that's my gig. And it was just, like Don Henley's up there, and they didn't tell us he was going to be there, and he's playing, like we're watching from backstage, and he's singing I forget he was singing Desperado or something like that, but then, you know, he goes back to the drums after that song's over. He goes back to the drums and he's like, sits down, brings the mic to his face. He gives out a big sigh. All right, here it is. And then Hotel California starts playing. And it's like the amount of despair on his face for playing Hotel California, because he's probably played it 5,000 times. And he's like, whatever, man, just pay me. I'll play it. Like, it was so strange. It's just gigs like that, man. Like, it was meeting... Dan Marino in the bathroom of Caesar's Palace at a gig for his foundation, and I'm just like, where am I right now? It was the strangest thing, but it's crazy.
Well, that's that. I mean, there are opportunities to work in Vegas, though. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, yeah, I guess you have to go to a city where there's opportunities, right?
Yeah.
Be it L.A., Vegas, New York.
Entertainment-based cities, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I, you know, Houston has somewhat of an art scene. It's just not as Houston's so big that it ends up being the communities are the suburbs have their own scenes. And so some are better than others. It's just, you would think with the bigger city, it would be easier to network. But honestly, I'm finding that it's actually a little bit more difficult. Maybe it's because I had, you know, a flow of kind of a connection sequence with all these different people from UNLV who were still in town and stuff like that. But with Houston, it's more of like there's a scene for everything. And then like it's about like trying to meet, you know, certain people, and then you find Facebook groups and all this. It's just there's way more people here that play than people would think. I mean, it's the fourth largest city in the U.S. So it's it's not really an art based city anyway. There's not.
But it's probably like a lot of like church. There's probably a lot of like mega church gigs, right?
Yeah, like huge.
People do a lot of that, right?
Yeah, a lot of that. A lot of theater gigs, like musical theater gigs, and other than that, it's a lot of country bands and rock bands and cover gigs and stuff like that.
Yeah, and do you like, I mean, have you done musical theater gigs or?
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I dig it. I it's actually one of my favorite things to do. It has turned into that just from the opportunities to get to do them. Those books are really fun, and one of my good friends from Vegas, James Whiting, he's from Australia, and he did a lot of those Australia Broadway tours, doing the percussion book and stuff like that. And him just kind of explaining that world to me was really, I was like, man, that actually sounds like a lot of fun. You know, the music is, you know, that's, for one thing, it's steady work if you can land one of those. And also it's, you know, it could be a lot of fun. So it's, yeah, something that's kind of like gone up to the top of my list over time is definitely an interest. And, you know, hearing about, he knows a few of the Broadway guys, of course, who are in a tough time right now, but those Broadway guys are the real deal. And so they have a lot of, I guess, a lot of work their way when Broadway is up and running. Hopefully it can get back up and running in May, like they say. But one of my biggest drumming influences, Carter McLean, is, you know, the Lion King drummer, which I hope he still is. I don't know if he is or not, if that show's still open, but something like that would be awesome. You know, I think if for anybody, like just steady work, you're playing a book that you're familiar with and eventually becomes, I guess, second nature. And that's really kind of like the goal, right? Is consistency and, you know, kind of security in a job like that, for playing at least, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a show actually for a while.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. It was called Fun Home.
Oh, nice. Yeah. We did that at UNLV.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I that was my book.
Very nice. Was that on, was that on Broadway or was it?
Yeah. It was on, it won musical of the year actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It won. It won. Yeah. But, I think it only lasted for like 2 years. It's not like one of those things like Lion King that's lasted for like, you know, ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, yeah. Yeah. I got that opportunity because I know I still know the orchestrator actually,
mm-hmm.
who knew what I did. That's why there's like Cajon and a bunch of other stuff in it, like playing drums, and said, let's do this sound for the show.
Wow. Yeah. There's a lot of percussion, like, you know, just, it's like a, it makes a lot of sense now. It's a lot of
hybrid. Yeah, it's a percussion-based hybrid drum set vibe, yeah, with Chris Hollies and bells and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So I played that. Awesome. Yeah, I was gone a fair amount, though, actually. That's the other thing. You know, it's like if you have that gig, you can take a quote-unquote leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so then if you have a tour I took a couple of leaves that were like, I think, 6 weeks long or something. And so you give the work to somebody else.
These tours are with, you know, bands.
Oh, with jazz. With some of the jazz groups, like Why I'm Here Now.
Yeah, yeah, actually. Yeah. So how long do you plan on being over in Paris? For the time, I have no forever. Idea. Yeah.
I don't know about that. I still have an apartment. So I don't know, actually. Maybe come back in September or something. So.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, you froze up for a second.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, you're good. Yeah. So with everything, you know, going on, obviously that is everybody's like, how long is that, you know, or how long are you going to be there? How long are you going to do this? You know, for me especially, and I'm just like,
How long are you going to be in, probably going to be in Texas for?
And it's the same answer. It's like, yeah. I don't know. But you know, I think if, you know, if I were to do a tour in Europe, for one thing, that would be incredible. I've only been to London. That's it. But what were those like first couple tours like? I mean, obviously it's kind of similar to that drum corps thing, right? Where you're getting the opportunity to see the world playing music in another fashion, obviously. But what were those early European tours like?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely, yeah, no, you definitely learn some skills.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like now I have like a really, I would say, I just don't bring so much stuff anymore. Like, you know, initially I had like a flight case for my Cajon,
yeah,
cymbal bag, you know, I'd have like a ton of stuff. And then like, we'd be like taking trains in Germany. And like you get there, it's like a beautiful cobblestone, you know, whatever. It's like, even in Paris, like you're,
yeah,
you get off of the train station, it's like cobblestone, and you're like, oh damn.
Yeah.
And you're just like,
yeah, like it's now, like making a ton of noise.
Totally. Now I don't even like, I will bring my suitcase and the percussion stuff that fits inside of it. And like, that's it. The rest of it's backlined.
Okay.
And
yeah.
If it's funky stuff, I'll deal with it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, can you do, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think also to a certain degree now, I have the skill of making, if I have like tape, I can make like any drum sound good.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and cymbals sound good for that matter.
Let's take a quick second to pause the episode to talk about how you can support the podcast even further. Thank you for listening, for one thing, but another thing is how you can support is a monthly subscription to the podcast. It's just 99 cents a month. It goes directly to me, and I can use that money to buy more equipment, video equipment, recording equipment, and it goes directly back into the podcast. So if you could click that support link in the description below, I would greatly appreciate it. Back to the episode.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays it's the fashion is to stack cymbals anyways. If they sound horrible, stack a couple, make a stack, you know, I don't know.
You make it work,
You make it work, exactly. It's like, I just try to remain positive and make it work. That's more of a priority than me, like, breaking my back or something.
Right, of course. I mean,
you know,
nobody wants to haul around. I mean, as much as we love playing drums and percussion, we don't want to.
Yeah, nobody likes them. I mean, I don't anyways.
I don't, no.
Yeah,
I
mean,
I get it, you know, having a rock and roller cart and everything, but like, geez, I mean, if you're talking about the cobblestone European roads,
good not luck. Happening, man.
No, yeah. It's not happening. No, but I mean, I think it, especially when it comes to like the amount of stuff that you play, and you know, I can only imagine you get some questionable instruments backlined.
I mean, yeah. With one of the groups, we always get like, we have like a Dubek is on the rider. And like lots of times I've gotten this small toy one.
Yeah.
But I just don't play it. You know what I mean? I always bring, I have a Cooperman frame drum that I basically always bring in a mm-hmm. stick bag and some Japanese fan drums that are just basically just a head. You know, it's a head.
You throw those on the drum set, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's like, I have, I don't have it. It's in my studio right now. I have a studio here. It's not there. It's there. But basically, you know, it's a skin head with a special mount that's pretty tiny, but it goes in a boom cymbal stand.
Mm-hmm.
So I just bring that frame drum, some fan drums, stick bag, basically done. It's not a big not a big schlep.
I think you got more questions about that drum.
Oh God.
Than anything else.
Of the fan drums?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, so those are pretty cool. I originally bought one when I was on tour in Japan. I was in Tokyo. There's an amazing drum maker there. So I bought one, a smaller one, and then another friend of mine, Kaoru Watanabe, who was a Japanese drummer and musician and flute player and everything, he also played on that movie, Isle of Dogs, Wes Anderson.
Oh,
I don't know if
cool.
you've seen that.
I haven't
There's a
seen
bunch
it,
of
but I've heard of
drumming.
it.
Anyways, that's him.
Yeah.
He was kind enough to give me another one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only way you can really get, I forget who I was telling this to, but the only way you can really get real deal authentic drums like that is you got to go and get them almost, or you got to order them from the source kind of thing. Like that would be something I would probably see in a Japanese drum shop or whatever and be like, I gotta have it because it's so unique. And like, I think you got more questions about those drums and when you were touring and you came to play for us than anything else. I don't know if you, maybe you didn't. I think you had
I
them
don't know if I
like,
had them. I've had it for a couple of years.
oh, you know what you got questions about? You got questions about Morph Beats, his the
Oh, those
gamelan
the
thing.
gamelan strips. Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
those things are sweet. His stuff is amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. Oh yeah,
Yeah.
I forgot to say, the time between graduating from Kansas City and going to New York, I actually went to Indonesia to study gamelan music.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did
Wow.
for like 6 weeks or something.
How was that?
I was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like but
Otherworldly.
I felt like when I got done with my you know what, when I got done with my master's degree recital and I played like I can't even remember what I played now. But I played a bunch of marimba music, and I was kind of like, and I read, it was like a bunch of intense reading music. I wanted to go somewhere where I could learn some music and not read Western notation
That'd be
and just
awesome,
kind of
yeah.
and have a different outlook on life. So that's why I went there. So I just like saved my money and I mean, also it was like at the time it was so cheap. It was like I think like $1 a day for my hotel and
Oh,
like
man.
my lessons were like, I don't even remember, $5 for like an hour. And then I
Wow.
had like a motorcycle, which was like, I don't even, it was nothing. So, and also it was an amazing experience. I don't know if you're familiar with gamelan music, the rhythmic cycles they use, the interlocking, aspect of the rhythms, the its relationship to the dance.
Yeah.
It's a super cool
It's almost hypnotic. I mean, it's
yeah,
almost,
totally.
I mean, watching the ensembles that I've seen, I haven't seen that many, but like it's just very, it's almost like it's like an out of body experience when you really like truly are dialed in and listening to it. When I can only imagine learning it is pretty much the same experience. I mean, I don't really know. I've never played any gamelan ensemble, but I do know that listening to it, I'm like, I could really get lost in this sound, this conglomerate of sound going on.
Yeah, it's nice. But I mean, my lessons consisted basically of my teacher, we would just hang, he would play something, and then I would just play it back to him, and like it just went like that until I had
Yeah.
learned a couple of pieces. And then actually when I came to New York, I played in the gamelan group at the Indonesian consulate. And then I actually also played, I learned one instrument called gender wayang. I think I'm saying that right, which is kind of like the Indonesian vibraphone. You play with two mallets and you strike it and then you dampen the
Oh, I've seen that.
yeah, it's for the
Yeah.
puppet show. And so I learned some repertoire with that, and then I actually played at the United Nations with the teacher to like sort of raise awareness for Indonesia. And
Wow.
yeah, it was nice actually. But it also, it was an interesting fact that we were like the only two people that played in New York at the time, I guess.
That Gamelan stuff?
Yeah, that particular instrument anyways.
Wow.
So, yeah, so I don't know, that was a great experience, but also I kind of had to phase that out because I started to kind of really suffer financially, actually. Mm-hmm. It became a little bleak, you know, because clearly, like, you know, the Gamelan gigs aren't paying the bills.
Yeah.
So
you have to dial it back a little bit.
I had to just do some other things. So
you mean to tell me you're not gonna make a fortune off playing Gamelan?
My goal isn't to make a fortune, but you know, it's just like surviving these
things. Yeah, exactly. Having enough to keep things going.
Yeah.
Which I think is the most intimidating part for people, right? When they choose a career like this, when they choose to go all in and play, right? I mean, that for one thing, you have to have the work ethic, right? And a lot of times, your work ethic is going to outvalue the amount of, I guess, financial. Kind of resources you're going to have. It's almost like money, for one thing, nobody ever talks about it, right? It's kind of like a social stigma. And for people that are in your position and a position that I hope to be in, but, you know, I feel like in this path, money can't really be the first thing on your mind. I think it has to be, you're dedicated to the craft and to the music first, and you'll figure it out financially. Is that an approach you've taken, or is it just kind of like you've never worried about it? You just want to have enough to survive.
Well, I definitely worried about it. I definitely still worry about it, actually, you know, like considering the current climate, you know,
right.
and situation.
I'm sure those early days you had a mindset of like,
But also it was just me, you know, it's like,
yeah, of course
it was just me living in like a small apartment. I had like no expenses. I have two kids now,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like, that's a whole like different, a different thing.
The mindset shift, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Also, I waited longer to have children,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know if that was why, but like, you know.
Just how it happened.
Yeah, exactly. And mm-hmm. But yeah, that's a serious reality check. You know, there's a lot to navigate there. I have a lovely wife. I love her. She is very understanding, especially, you know, like before we had kids, I would go on tour for like, you know, a month at a time sometimes. So, but I always did my best to like, you know, like one time I went to Thailand for a month and I brought her, you know, she would come for like the whatever mm-hmm. for part of it. And then when we met, I had a month long tour in Japan, and then she came for part of that when I had a downtime, you know, I don't know. She's always was understanding and supportive, and
yeah,
you just got to find a partner that you work with.
Not a very common, it's not a very common profession to have to like model, like everybody's path is different in this profession, I feel like.
Sure.
And so you have to have somebody that's understanding like, hey, this could happen. This could happen. This could happen. You know? So,
I mean, I think that the key is just, sorry, I think that the key is like, I don't know. She's super dedicated with what she does, mm-hmm. and I'm dedicated with what I do, and that works. So,
how's your French these days?
Oh my God, it's okay. I it's like I'm definitely an immigrant, man. I go to my French class twice a week.
Do you really? That's awesome.
Oh yeah, yeah. I have to.
Yeah.
I gotta say though, a lot of the lot of the groups that I play in, people just speak English the whole time.
Okay,
just because like relieving. the it's like a more like all those guys, one of the guys is Canadian and another person, you know, it's just like they're also much more sort of international. It's not like they're like, we're not in rural France,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, it's It's a learning process. And look, I enjoy it. I think, yeah, do you speak other language?
No, but...
So try, you know?
It's I grew up in a very... There's a lot of Hispanic culture here in Houston, obviously, because of Mexico being so close and everything. So I understand quite a bit of Spanish. I just can't form it in my head to respond correctly.
Yeah, just give it, you know, I don't know. I think you got to go deep though also. It's like,
yeah, of course, immerse yourself in it.
Exactly. It's like, It's the same thing about like learning gamelan music. It's kind of difficult to do, you know, let's rephrase that. It's a different experience to go there and immerse yourself. Same thing here. I'm here. I go outside. I buy some food. I have to speak French.
Of course, yeah.
Now it's like, do they know I'm not from here? Yeah. but the key is, do they understand me? So
Man, I don't know how I would do. You probably handle it better than I would, but it's funny because, you know, I think it would be my main concern is like, if I was trying to play out there, it'd be like, is there going to be a language barrier? Is like, how's the scene out there? I mean, how is the community out there of musicians? I'm sure it's pretty prominent. I'm sure there's a lot of people there, but you know, compared to New York, is it happening, or in, I guess, in a regular world, is it as happening as New York is, or is it just like this big melting pot of, you know, different people from all over the world? I can only imagine it would be, just because Paris had such a reputation of being, you know, kind of an arts capital.
Yeah. I mean, those are a lot of good questions. I think it's definitely a different vibe than New York. Like, it's like a different and you have to remember, there's like a huge North African influence in Paris.
Oh,
like they colonized North Africa.
Yeah,
it's like that's a huge population here. So that being said, Frame Drum, Doombeck, Rick, it's like, you know, I feel like in the United States, you pull that out, people are like, wow, mind blown. You
there, pull it out like here, a drum set.
They're like, yeah, okay, great.
Yeah. They're like, whatever, man. Like, we can do split finger too, so whatever.
but you know, it's not like the sort of shock appeal is gone.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. It's different. I mean, one of the interesting things about France, you have to realize, is they have this thing called intermittent. It's like where basically, I'm like attempting to get this now. So I'm a musician. I am French. I play a gig, and it's like registered with a government agency. Okay. Once I play enough gigs over a 10-month period, I can qualify for a fund that will pay me a monthly stipend if I don't have gigs.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
It's called
supporting the arts.
Yeah, that's the definition of supporting the arts.
That's what they're not doing in New York right now. So basically, so that's the deal. You get your health insurance through that. You get a pension through that, actually. So
France got to figure it out.
Yeah, totally. Okay. That being said, I think it also leads to some, more people have their own groups.
Oh,
well, because if you organize your own group, you play your own music,
more gigs equal over that 10-month period.
Yeah. Cause right. It's 42 gigs over a 10-month period. And look, there were months in New York where I played more than 42 gigs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's like it's a different sort of pace.
So I was about to say pace is probably a little bit slower there.
Yeah, it's a little slower. But I mean, there's still many wonderful, amazing, creative musicians
Sure. Yeah.
I'm happy. I played a session yesterday. I went to my studio today, did some recording, writing some more music. I don't know. That's just what. Yeah.
What does a John Hadfield in 2020 practice session look like?
Well, I practice every day, actually, I gotta say.
Oh, okay. Listen to that, everybody. Practice every day.
Okay, maybe not on Sundays, but I don't know. I feel like I'm always like practicing or thinking about something.
Right.
I know. I have a notebook that I work on. I have a notebook. Yeah. Look, everybody knows it's a little more difficult now because like before I'm in New York, I practice for gigs.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, you have to do this recording session. Here's the part. And so I practice that, you know. Now I have to be a little more resourceful. I practice things that I find inspiring or I learn from other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just kind of like anybody. It's like now I feel like if you don't know what to practice right now, if you just like spend like 5 minutes on Instagram or Facebook, like you have enough material to practice.
Yeah, you're getting like inspired days. Constantly. Definitely.
It's like just go through, find someone doing something cool. And
yeah. Your videos are like that for me.
Thank you.
I mean,
that's another thing. It's like, what should we do now? Should we just do that full time? Should we just make videos full time?
Just make videos full time and, you know, try to get sponsors and.
Yeah. I think I'm too old, but because like, part of me is just like, not like, I would rather just play actually.
Yeah. Well, I mean, then what it's turning like, no, into, what, I mean, content creation is taking over the drum and percussion world. Like, just you look at the podcast list now. When I started, mine was like 4 podcasts of drums and percussion, and now there's a new one popping up every week. It seems like content creation is taking over every industry, actually. I mean, you see people stepping up their social media game, companies stepping up their social media game. Like, it's almost like a culture now. It's there's like standards. There's, you know, like, is how does my content compare to these people's content, kind of thing. And for one thing, there's one thing to remember when you're making videos, right? You actually need to play well, and like, you can have the best camera in the world and the best drum mics in the world, the best interface in the world, but if you're not playing well, I think people see right through that, right?
Yeah, that's true. But look, I think it also takes a lot of resources to acquire the camera, microphone, space. Yeah. You know, in New York, it's pretty difficult to have a space large enough to do that.
Would you make a
like
John
Carter
Hadfield?
Carter lives in Connecticut.
Yeah, he takes a train, right?
Or something. Yeah, exactly. Like that. Yeah, he takes Metro North down to play the show. I was saying, I live in the Village. It's like a much more it's not. Before I had a studio in Brooklyn, which is also small.
Uh-huh.
So
I mean, New York is notoriously everybody's on top of each other, right? I mean,
it's just.
But you know, I mean, what Carter's done with his studio though is
home studio. That's amazing.
It's amazing. It's incredible. Yeah. And working with Audimute and all those guys that like just made it kind of like a heavenly forever space, you know. He owns it, it's his, like, that's the dream, right? I mean, but you know, his content is I like his videos are inspiring to me because he plays to the music to a T. Like, he's not he can play whatever he wants, but like him finding the right the correct, I guess, avenue for whatever song he's playing, whether it's with the guitar player he plays with, Charlie Hunter, or he's playing to a, you know, he's making a YouTube video real quick and he's like, I'm gonna play to this song. It's an indie song with no drums, but I'm gonna play and add drums to it. And I mean, like, those are the kind of videos that just automatically find their way to the top. To me, your videos find the way to the top as well, because they're so, your playing is so unique, your setup is so unique, and
you're also often not playing in conventional time signatures, right? I mean, and you're playing polyrhythmic stuff that is, it's a fresh approach, for lack of a better term, because we often hear the same, when it comes to like Instagram videos or Facebook videos, you often hear kind of like the same like take on a certain beat, or you're hearing someone play to a drumless track or something like that. But with the way you've set up your kit and the way that you kind of approach rhythm is a fresh approach in my mind.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that. And I know when you were doing the tour and you came through like Charles, you were really into Indian rhythmic cycles and you know, kind of speaking out rhythms with, you know, the correct vowel and everything like that, as opposed to you know, writing everything down. I think you and Shane were doing the same thing, right? You were doing kind of like some Indian
we both studied basically what is called Carnatic music from South India,
right?
And that's a really great way and tool to understand, yeah, rhythmic cycles.
Yeah, and so it's a fresh approach, I think, is the best way to describe it in my mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, if you have those tools, it makes like, you know, like the guitarist that I played with here recently, Nguyen Le, he writes some pretty insane time signature. So they're utilizing a lot of his pieces. It's tricky. So I have to find a way to be able to play that. And also feel comfortable playing it, and then also feel comfortable soloing over it.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And that's, you know, and like, yeah, so it's just some tools. Look, I gotta say also, nowadays I often will make a mock-up. Like I have my whole recording studio in my space. I'll make a MIDI mock-up of the loops or the grooves that I'm doing, and then I'll play that, I'll record it, I'll see what works, what doesn't work.
Yeah, just sense? Like make a loop on like a synth or like a MIDI keyboard or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Exactly. It's like, because like, look, if he sends me the chart, it's going to be in Sibelius. I just export the MIDI, drop it into Ableton, whatever. It doesn't actually matter so much what the, you know, I can get some cool sounding stuff, and then that's how I get comfortable on it to feel successful playing the music.
That's the main thing, is comfortability, right? And that kind of not very common time signatures or like, you know, complex rhythms and rhythm cycles. It's just comfortability. I think utilizing that technological aspect is something that a lot of people don't feel the inspiration to do so. They don't feel the motivation to do so. I think for me, for one thing, fear of failure drives me, but also like I've seen people play this complex kind of realm of rhythm and music that a lot of people don't get to because they don't understand how to get there. But like, I feel like if I see somebody who does it, I don't feel like anything's impossible in music. I do feel like that anybody could get to that point. It's just a kind of a, you know, what drives you to get to that point. And talking to people, especially on the podcast and off the podcast or whatever, that's where I get the most inspired, because then you can kind of really dive into how successful people process their musicianship, how they develop their musicianship, even later on in their careers or in the middle of their careers, whatever. And it makes me feel like I'm, you know, and people in my shoes who are just starting out, it makes me feel like I'm not running out of time, right? You still feel like people who are where you are, where you want to be, who are already there, you feel like they're still working on stuff that is, you know, that is along the lines of what anybody would be working on. So that's, you know, it's comforting, right? I mean, obviously you're working on something that is, you know, far down the road as far as advanced rhythmic, you know, complexities go. But You know, it's just, like I said, it's just inspiring, right? It's, and if you did want to start the John Hadfield YouTube channel or, you know, the Drum Academy and you put stuff like that, I think people would appreciate it because it's, like I said, I keep using the term fresh approach, but it's just, it's inspiring, man. I that's why I wanted to have you on is because it's,
thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it's just really, it's really fun to watch and it's fun to see that kind of like all these instruments come together. And I know the setup probably changes a lot, but I know the setup you had when you came through for the tour was really cool to see. So it's somebody who's a super drum percussion nerd like myself is like, you know, mind is like, you know, like I could do that, you know.
Exactly. And you can do that. Yeah. I mean, I would also just like to say though, it's like the music dictates that setup though, right?
Of course, yeah.
And also it's like the musicians that I'm playing with dictate that I have to if we're not playing my music into somebody else's music, that's why I have to understand. I just happen to play in a bunch of groups where people are super into rhythm.
Yeah.
You know.
Same.
I gotta go to the Glenn Velez Zoom.
Okay.
Yeah. I apologize.
No, you're good, man. Yeah. Just thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I don't know. Keep me posted. Let me know what you're doing.
Yeah, I will. Yeah. I'm just grinding it out over here, man. So keep working on, I'm just.
No, but seriously, it's like once you do eventually decide to go, if you go back to Vegas or whatever you do, just keep everybody posted. That's also a good way for you to like other people to help you get on your feet when you, you know, start gigging again.
Yeah. I'm going to utilize that as much as I can as a marketing tool more than anything. And, trying to put out quality stuff and make sure that I'm keeping consistent. It's hard to, it can be hard to stay motivated. When it looks bleak like this. But I'm getting better at it. So,
yeah.
Get
a routine.
Yeah. Trying. Yeah. I really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun.
I really appreciate you asking. Yeah, let's do it again sometime or something, or just call me.
Yeah, man. I will definitely probably be calling you. You can follow John on his Facebook. His name is John Hadfield on Facebook. And do you have an Instagram?
Yeah, I do. It's kind of a joke. It's Mr. Sunshine Beam.
Mr. Sunshine Beam. There you go. I never
was a little sarcastic. Yeah. I remember when I made that, you know, when I created that, I didn't think Instagram was going to be quite so huge.
Oh man. It is.
It's like, man,
it changed the world.
Yeah, exactly.
But you can follow me at Hartwell Drums on Twitter and Instagram. And you can find me on Facebook, Joshua Hartwell. You can follow me on my website, www.hartwelldrums.com, for all rudimental podcasts updates, and you can find all the podcasts on major streaming platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, all the good stuff. If you want to support the podcast in any way, refer back to the monthly ad in the middle of the episode and find the support link in the description below. So, yeah, that's it for this one.